best of us. She stood her ground against a force she couldn't possibly hold back. She lived her entire life as a hero. She died as one, too. One moment they were there, the next they were gone. Through the still-developing cloud of confusing fog, the monstrous claws ripped forward, cutting through the nurse and the elderly man as if they weren't even there. Yolanda's body disintegrated in a red cloud of ribbon-like flesh like she was a knitted sweater that had been unraveled all at once. The monster didn't even break stride. It came for us, despite the fog. It swung a mighty claw just as I smashed down on protective shell. The monster flew back as if it was a charging dog that had reached the end of its leash. The transparent, glowing semicircle shell spread around me, completely filling the section of the hallway, floor to ceiling. The rage elemental hissed and squealed with fury as it went flying back, skidding. It jumped up, charging again. Its badger head made it through the shield, but the moment its giant claws touched the force field, it rebounded yet again. It seemed the sharp tips of the monster's claws couldn't make it through the protection.
"Holy shit!"
I cried. I hadn't expected that to work.
"Run!"
Donut leaped off my shoulder as I turned and rushed toward the others, who were struggling to get everyone into the safe room. The individual cars were too wide for the entrance. Imani and Chris were bodily pulling people off their chairs and tossing them into the open door. The round shield remained firmly in place, and I felt an odd pop in my ears as we left its area of effect. The spell was only going to last 20 seconds, and I'd already wasted 5 of them being dumbfounded. About halfway to the door, the ground disappeared underneath me. At least, that's what I thought had happened. At first, I fell. But I fell upward, crashing into the ceiling. A few feet in front of me, Donut flipped in midair, deftly landing upside down. In front of me, the very last train car flew upward, and the remaining resident, Mrs. McGibbons, cried out as she also slammed up into the top of the hallway, wheelchair crashing upon her like she'd been dumped face first down into a hole. My shoulder crunched, but I slammed a health potion before the pain could hit me. Gravity had been reversed. The elemental had cast the spell, but it hadn't reached all the way to the safe room door. That last platform, connected by Imani's magic chain, remained attached to the rest of the cars, and it dangled upward, having dislodged its only remaining rider. I didn't look back. I pulled myself to my feet and kept running, but now I was upside down, running on the ceiling of the hallway. We rushed toward the crumpled form of Mrs. McGibbons, who groaned and rolled onto her back, feebly pushing the wheelchair off herself. It rolled a few feet forward and reached the edge of the spell's effect. It clattered to the ground. She opened her eyes, and upon seeing that she was now stuck to the roof of the hallway, she started to cry out in fear. Her health was deep in the red.
"I got you,"
I said, picking her up. I pulled her over my shoulder like a sack. Ahead of me, Chris and Imani were ushering the last of the residents into the room. I could see Brandon just inside the door, moving them out of the way. Imani was screaming Yolanda's name. Donut took a step toward the door, and she plummeted off the ceiling, also having reached the edge of the spell's effect. She, once again, landed easily.
"Be careful, Carl,"
she called up to me.
"Get the wheelchairs, then get inside,"
I cried as I pulled a health potion and shoved it in Mrs. McGibbon's hand.
"Drink this!"
I anticipated where the line of gravity was, and I tried a desperate flip maneuver in an attempt not to be upside down when I fell. It didn't work. I shielded the crying woman's body as I landed, once again, in a painful heap on the ground right next to the wooden platform. I groaned and smashed down on my own heal spell. Behind me, the rage elemental roared as the spell dissipated. It rocketed down the hall at us, claws raking up stones as it ran. It ran on its 4 back legs and reached forward with its 2 forward arms, which somehow made the beast seem even more horrifying.
"Shit!"
I scrambled to my feet. Donut hit it with another magic missile before turning and bolting toward the door. Chris and Imani pulled their last resident in. I ran. The ground shook as if a locomotive was bearing down on me. 10 feet. 5 feet. 1 foot. I jumped at the door, banging into the frame and ricocheting inside just as the monstrosity's forward claws swiped at me, missing by millimeters. It squealed in frustration, continuing its forward momentum as it slid down the hallway. I had a quick sense of deja vu, of the goblin murder dozer also missing me by inches. I handed Mrs. McGibbons to Brandon, pulled a boom jug, and returned to the hallway. I lit and tossed it at the backside of the still-turning elemental before I jumped back into the room and slammed the door. We could hear the monster's screams through the thick walls. It made a sound that was part pain, part rage, part the end of the fucking world. I knew there was no way I could have really heard it, but I felt a wave of satisfaction at that horrific, penetrating sound. A moment later, the door pulsed, creaking worryingly as the elemental attempted to get in. It screamed and thrashed and pounded, throwing itself against the impenetrable door with all its might. "Jesus," I muttered, reaching down to grab my legs. I closed my eyes, unable to get the sight of Yolanda and Randall out of my head. "Jesus," I repeated, out of breath. I turned to survey the room. We stood in what appeared to be a dusty, no way they passed the health inspection chicken restaurant. "Big Shot Chicken," the sign said. I'd never heard of it. A babka protector stood behind the counter, looking distastefully at the large crowd. Mrs. McGibbons hadn't taken the potion I'd given her, but she still clutched it in her hand. I watched as Brandon helped her drink it down. She continued to cry as her health rose. Most of the residents were on the ground, weeping for help. They'd been savagely tossed into the room. Imani, tears on her cheeks, was helping them one by one to the booths so they could sit and recover, administering healing potions to those who needed them. Donut had saved several wheelchairs, but there was no way we had enough now. Chris, his head low, turned to also help. Donut jumped to my shoulder, and her whole body was shaking.
"Fucking Jack,"
Brandon said, growling the words.
"He knew. We explained it to him."
Zev's message echoed in my head. This was a mistake. Helping these people. All we are doing is hindering our own training and delaying their inevitable deaths. It would have been kinder to have left them on the first floor rather than subject them to this terror. I looked up at the screens.
"Time to recap episode, 1 hour, 40 minutes. Time to level collapse, 4 days, 20 hours. Remaining crawlers, 1,033,992.
"You saved me,"
Mrs. McGibbons said, sitting up on the floor. 99 years old. I didn't think I'd ever met anyone that old before. Not a human, at least.
"Thank you. Thank you so much."
I smiled weakly. "Of course," I said.
"Jack was always an ass,"
she continued. She made a clucking noise.
"Poor Yolanda. She was such a good kid. And Randall. Dumb as a pigeon, that one. But he deserved better than that. At least it was quick. Do you think it's gonna leave?"
Donut asked. Behind me, the door continued to smash and rock under the onslaught of the screaming rage elemental. Chapter 39. Views, 212 billion. Followers, 4.4 billion. Favorites, 793 million. The recap episode started with a close-up shot of Jack's purple, veined, and uncircumcised dick, huge on the screen. The headline screamed, "Trap! Meadowlark and the Royal Court of Princess Donut in Peril."
"Wow,"
Donut said.
"Yours isn't nearly that big, or oily-looking, and it doesn't have that hat thing."
If looks could kill, the glare Imani shot at the cat would have ripped her in two. "God damn it, Donut," I muttered before realizing I'd said it. "Not now." The screen showed, in slow motion, Jack pulling it out, turning to the wall, and peeing. It switched to Yolanda's horrified face, then Donut leaping for him, claws out. It showed the arrow piercing him right in the temple, of the player killer skull icon slowly starting to form over Yolanda's head. and then the man falling from the platform.
I can't watch this,
Imani said, getting up and turning away. See what happens next, appeared on the screen. Then the show started. As promised, it was a compilation of people getting surprised by bosses leaving their rooms. I noted two different scenes with Krakaren bosses. The shots kept coming and coming. People getting slaughtered. I eased back in the chair and took a bite of fried chicken. A part of me registered that the food was downright delicious, but I could barely taste it. Donut sat at the table being lovingly groomed with her new brush by the Babka protector. The constitution buff had activated many minutes earlier, but she demanded he keep brushing. This safe room, like the first one we'd visited, had 20 rooms for rent. They were still free on the second level. People slept in all 20 of them. Outside, the rage elemental continued to scream and smash at the door. It hadn't let up, not for one second. The thing seemed to have an endless supply of energy. I already had a plan on how to deal with it. I discussed it over chat with Donut. I'd have to wait at least a full Syndicate standard day, another 28 hours, before we'd be able to do it. That was how long the cooldown for my protective shell spell was. The problem was, this plan required us to abandon Team Meadowlark. Not just the elderly folks. All of them. I sighed, unable to concentrate on the show. Zev disappeared off the chat after the skirmish in the hallway. Donut, who'd apparently been chatting with her non-stop, was worried about the Kuatine. I didn't care. I was dreading our obligation to go on this talk show. We'd have to go onto the show before we left here. A wave of grubs descended upon us. I didn't know what was going to happen once they reached the hall with the rage elemental. I was hoping perhaps they'd distract the creature, cause it to wander off. I suspected we wouldn't get that lucky, but I had hope. Looking at the map, I guessed we'd find out just as the show ended. Donut and I both received a pair of achievements after our fight with the rage elemental.
New achievement! What goes up? You have been struck with and survived the dreaded reverse gravity spell. Well, you fared better than Albert II, the first Earth mammal to reach space alive. He was a rhesus monkey, in case you're wondering. He went up just fine. He didn't stick the landing. Reward? You can now tell people you're more durable than a monkey named Albert. New achievement! Like a moth to the flame. You attacked and caused damage to a mob that is more than 75 levels above your own. The fact that you're reading this suggests you're the luckiest fucker in the dungeon. Just remember, luck goes both ways. Like your mom. Reward? You've received a Platinum Lucky Bastard box.
Both of us received a similar item in the Platinum box. It was a lottery scratch-off ticket. Just like any scratcher ticket one could buy at a gas station or a liquor store. The tickets themselves were different. Donut's was red and green and had a small graphic of a troll-like creature throwing gold coins in the air. It was called Dungeon Gold Rush. She had 6 spots to scratch off. She immediately moved to scratch it, but received an error message telling her she couldn't use the ticket in a safe room. I made her hand it over so I could read the description.
Dungeon Gold Rush! Scratch off one spot, and depending on the symbol revealed, your next attack against a mob will have varying effects. Guaranteed laughs, 1 hour cooldown between scratches.
I flipped the little cardboard ticket over, and it revealed about 20 different symbols. Most of the results were good, like mob drops 5,000 coins, or damage against mob is doubled. But a few of the symbols offered some not-so-good choices, like mob splits in two, or mob is invulnerable for 30 seconds. Yeah, don't use this, I said. Not until we talk about it some. The last thing we need is you scratching off a symbol that'll quadruple the next mob's strength. The cat sighed.
Or I can scratch off a symbol and I will get 5,000 coins, Carl. Why must you always be so pessimistic?
Donut, like it said, luck goes both ways. We'll talk about it later.
Fine,
she said. I placed the ticket in front of her, and she huffed as it disappeared into her inventory.
What does yours do?
My ticket was the same size, but it only had 5 spots to scratch off. It was red on one side and pink on the other. A small cartoon dragon sat in the corner, holding a spoon. The dragon's tongue was out, licking its lips. I read the description.
Fireball or custard? Scratch off a spot in the midst of battle, and this zany ticket casts a spell at the closest red-tagged mob. Each spot has a 50-50 chance. Will it cast a level 15 fireball? Will it cast a glob of delicious healing strawberry custard? Who knows? Either way, the results will be a hoot. 30-minute cooldown between scratches.
I love custard,
Donut cried after I showed her the ticket. She looked up at the Babka protector, whose name was Quist.
Get me custard.
Yes, princess, right away, princess. What flavor?
The Babka asked. Donut had finished the custard by the time the show premiered. She'd chosen strawberry, turned her nose up at it, and went with a vanilla. We watched now as the disaster porno half of the show ended and the next part started. It was nothing new. The African warriors had finally run out of ammo. Several were using their AK-47s as clubs, but a few now had bows and arrows or swords. Lucia Marr was tearing her way through the dungeon. She had 4 player killer skulls by her name now, but they didn't show why or how that had happened. Interestingly, I noticed for the first time that neither of her Rottweilers had any skulls or stars by their names. It was because they were pets, I realized. Donut had originally been listed as a pet, but she'd transformed into a crawler early on. Weird. The crossbow-firing Valkyrie woman and her ever-growing crowd of female warriors were also killing their way through the dungeon. They'd named their group Brynhild's Daughters. The woman's name was Hecla, and the announcer gave a short history of her home country of Iceland. The AI was throwing loot at her to emphasize the Nordic shield maiden persona she was forming, including a ridiculous, glittering breastplate that seemed more apt for the cover of a harem fantasy novel than appropriate dungeon armor.
She's amazing,
Donut whispered.
We should hook up with her group.
Something tells me I wouldn't be too welcome, I said. The show ended with a short description of the issues with the bathrooms and some bullshit explanation why they had been forced to implement the rage elemental trap. Yeah, because piss is worse than blood and guts and whatever that is that comes out of the grubs, I said. It replayed the scene from the beginning of the episode with Jack whipping it out. It continued, showing Yolanda's death in gruesome, slow-motion detail. It showed me flying up to the ceiling, then hopping to my feet and running upside down, Matrix-style. Then me picking Mrs. McGibbons up and making it into the room with a millisecond to spare. I jumped out of the room brandishing the boom jug. The show paused, showing the recipe of the Carl's Jug-a-Boom. My mugshot appeared briefly with "Added to the Dungeon Codex" stamped over it. The scene resumed, showing me tossing the jug at the back of the monster before slamming the door. Its health plummeted almost 25%. The 6-legged black badger skull thing screamed, momentarily stunned by the attack. It took a good 10 seconds before it recovered, jumping up and resuming its attack against the door. It shrieked in ear-splitting fury as it healed itself. The healing moved much more slowly, I noted, thanks to the napalm-like effect of the boom jug. It ended with Donut saying,
"Do you think it's gonna leave?"
The show snapped off, and nobody said anything.
"He really did have a weird-looking dick," Chris said after a moment.
Imani walked up to him, wrapped her arms against the large man, and started laughing and crying at the same time.
"Hello, crawlers. Short message today. The dungeon is humming along nicely. Thanks again for your support. We have a lot of interest already in the new patron bidding program, so please keep up the good work. We have a few changes to announce. If you've watched the recap episode that just aired, you can see our penalties regarding the bathrooms have been a rousing success. The penalties will remain in place for the remainder of this floor, but I'm happy to announce they will be removed upon the collapse of this floor. Thank you, everyone, for your cooperation. The Satan's little hedgehog's mob have been removed and placed on a deeper floor. Their armor-piercing quill attack has been deemed too strong for this floor by the system AI. Apologies to all those affected. We've had a few complaints about the proliferation of the grub mobs. This is not a bug, and is by design. Finally, due to the abundance of crawlers camping in safe rooms upon the collapse of the first floor, we've been forced to make a difficult decision. From now on, all safe rooms and safe areas will close 1 hour prior to floor collapse. Any crawler who is in a designated safe area will be teleported to just outside that area at 1 hour prior. As always, kill, kill, kill.
On the message board, a new timer appeared, just below the time to level collapse timer. Time to safe room closure. It was 1 hour faster than the level timer. I met eyes with Brandon, who looked stricken. At that moment, I knew he'd been thinking the same thing as me, that it was time to just give it up. Donut. Our views! Carl, our views! Outside, the door stopped bashing itself in. It was oddly quiet. I looked up at the minimap. The mass of grubs had reached the hallway, and the elemental finally noticed them. It left the door and tore through them as I watched. It followed the line of red dots around the corner and disappeared down the hallway. I had a moment to think. Shit, we should have been ready to run. But it was over in less than a minute. The thousands of red dots were just gone. The description stated the elemental dissipated after it claimed 666 souls. Whatever that meant. I was hoping that the grubs counted toward that number. They didn't. The elemental returned to the door, thrashing and smashing, trying to get back in. If we'd run, it would have followed us. Even if we'd used the chopper, there was no way we'd have gotten away. Not unless we'd split up and gone in different directions. And even then, it probably would have gotten us. The map seemed to flicker for a moment, and a long line of X's appeared where the grubs had all died. Already more red dots appeared, moving toward their fallen brothers and sisters. On the map, near the stairs, just a quarter mile away, a group of 15 red dots sat. I hadn't noticed them before. I hovered over the icons.
Grub. Pupa stage.
A counter, currently at just under 10 hours, was ticking away next to their names. I remembered the scene from the recap episode. The level 93 mob, after sliding down the hall, had been hurt by my boom jug. It had taken almost a quarter of its life away before it healed itself. Then I remembered something else. It was something Rory the Shamanka, the one with all the piercings on her face, had told us. I hadn't thought much about it at the time. I looked down at Donut. Carl, the plan has changed. We can't wait for my shield to cool down. Come on, Donut, I said out loud, pushing a table away in the corner of the restaurant. We were going to need a lot of space.
What are you doing?
Brandon asked, standing from his table. I pulled a bunch of items from my inventory, piling it on the floor. The round free weights clanged loudly as they hit the tiles. I need your help, I said. Chapter 40. We still had some cans of Agatha's spray paint, and I painted Mother of All Bombs on the side of the contraption. It took us about 5 hours to finish building the launcher. Brandon pointed out MOAB actually stood for Massive Ordnance Air Blast, but his brother said,
Don't be that guy.
It doesn't matter,
Brandon said.
The name is still wrong. When they say Mother of All Bombs, they mean one giant bomb. Not whatever this thing is. You should call it the Bomb Chicken or something.
It's too late, I said, indicating the spray paint. I've already named it. Besides, I like the name. It's a play on words.
Well, I'm going to call it the Bomb Chicken whether you like it or not,
Brandon declared. I'd discovered something interesting while building the device. This should have been obvious earlier, but it hadn't even occurred to me. In the safe room, all of my sticks of dynamite were harmless. I could pull them out, and under status, they had inert while in safe room, followed by a parenthesis stating their real status. Their status still ticked down while being handled, and I didn't want to tempt fate enough to find out what would happen when the status reached zero, but I was relatively certain they wouldn't blow. Brandon stepped back now, admiring our work.
Do you really think this is going to kill it?
He asked, suddenly serious. Not a chance. That thing is level 93. It ain't going to like this too much, but there's no way it'll be enough. The babies will slow it down, though. Brandon gave me a sour look.
If it's not going to kill it, then why are we doing this?
It's all part of the plan.
Wait, what exactly is the plan?
He asked. He waved at my contraption.
I thought this was the plan.
Like I said, it's part of it, but it's not all of it. I can't tell you the rest, I said, pointing up at the ceiling, which had become the universal gesture for the assholes are listening. Since this scheme involved using a dungeon exploit, I wanted to keep it in my head. Even Donut didn't know the full extent. Mordecai told us that the viewers couldn't see our private chats, but Borant and the dungeon AI could. I didn't want to risk them changing the rules on us at the last second. Because that would really suck. Not that I'd live long enough to complain about it. We needed to get safely into the hallway. So the first component of this insane scheme was also one of the most terrifying parts. My first suggestion was to wait for the grubs to regroup and get close enough for the rage elemental to go hunting them again. But the grubs were painfully slow, and more of them were hitting the pupa stage, meaning they were no longer moving around. Imani came up with a bold solution.
Why don't we just open the damn door?
She said. This was hours ago, right when we started building the MOAB. We all looked at each other. I immediately grasped what she was saying. The idea was horrifying, but she was right. We were in a safe room. Mobs would teleport away. Not far away, according to Mordecai, but they would still be ejected.
Well, shit,
I said, putting down my goblin riveter. Maybe we don't need to build this thing at all. So, we tested it. We moved everyone to the other side of the restaurant, near the entrance to the sleeping chambers. I didn't know what was trembling more, me or the door. If we were wrong about this. I walked up, and I hesitantly reached for the exit. The moment I turned the handle, the door burst inward, and a giant claw raked at me, coming at my face as I flew back into the room. Thwoom! The sound of the monster teleporting away was odd, like that of an electrical generator turning on.
Oh! Holy crap, that worked!
I said, sitting up. My eyes searched the map, looking for it. I didn't see it anywhere. But a moment later, my relief turned to dread as I saw the dot rocketing toward us. It had come from the main hallway.
Shit, it's really booking it. It remembers where we are.
Keep the door open,
Imani said.
See if the dungeon sends it further away this time, or if it learns.
It was maybe 90 seconds before it entered our hallway again. It killed any grubs it passed, but it seemed to ignore the ones in the pupa stage. It roared and shrieked, came to the door, and once again tried to swipe at me. Again, it teleported away. This time it came from another hallway down, but it appeared to have still been teleported out into the main hallway. We tried it several times. Each time, the elemental took anywhere from 75 to 120 seconds to return. It was clear the monster was unintelligent, nothing more than the single-minded embodiment of rage. We eventually closed the door, not wanting to create any more grub corpses. I sighed, going back to work on the MOAB. Now, hours later, it was finally time to put my idea to the test. I was less confident about this than I was with the whole portable fortress idea. That time I knew we faced a mob meant to be killed. This was different. This was something meant as a punitive action, a punishment. It wasn't meant to be fair, to be survivable. The chopper hummed merrily away, aimed directly at the exit to the chamber. With Donut's sidecar, it was too big to get through the door. We'd been forced to remove it. Instead, we added the newly built bike trailer, affixing the tall MOAB to it and adding the equally tall seat for Donut behind the launcher. She'd have to duck in order for us to leave the room. She sat there now, facing backward, a look of grim determination on her fuzzy face, like a tail gunner in a World War II bomber.
I think I like bomb chicken better, too,
Donut announced. Too late, I said. I nodded at Imani, who stood at the door, ready to pull it open.
Okay,
she said.
I'll count down from three.
Donut. Everyone in the universe is watching this. I just hit 1 trillion views, Carl. 1 trillion.
Focus, Donut, I said, not bothering to use the chat.
One!
Imani yanked the door open. The massive, terrifying rage elemental lunged and, as always, teleported away. The space where it had occupied shimmered, crackling like superheated air. I pushed hard on the pedals of the bike, and we rushed into the hallway. Everything out here was blackened and turned to ash. It smelled like burning garbage, reminding me of the hoarder's chamber. There was no sign of the train cars or the remaining wheelchairs and walkers that had been abandoned. The only thing that had survived was the long, 300-foot length of glittering magical chain, which I had grabbed earlier. Behind me, Imani slammed the door. I pedaled down the hall, turning the throttle. The trailer was built using broken hunks of wood and the spare chopper wheels we'd looted from the goblins. I could barely feel its weight. It squeaked loudly, but it didn't bounce under the press of the MOAB. We passed the nearby intersection and furiously increased speed until we reached the next one down, another 200 meters away. We angled ourselves so we faced this new hallway, and we waited.
Here it comes,
Donut said a moment later. The dot appeared, and the elemental rushed down the distant hall, moving like an earth-destroying meteor sent from the heavens.
As soon as it rounds the curve, we go, I said.
We had to make sure it saw us. If it stopped at the door again, we'd have to loop around to gain its attention, using the closer hallway. I didn't want to do that. The less corners we had to take with this trailer, the better. Far down the hallway, a little more than a quarter of a mile away, it appeared, running full tilt.
I didn't have to worry about whether or not it was going to see us. It saw. The horned badger skull skidded to a stop, looking in our direction.
It shrieked with indignation and resumed its gallop, headed straight at us.
Holy shit, that thing is fast.
I pumped my legs.
Go, go!
Donut cried. Thanks to my chopper pilot skill and the help of the throttle, we could reach top speed in seconds. It still felt as if we weren't moving at all. The bike could go about 25 miles per hour before it got too hot. The elemental was like a cheetah. Unimpeded, it would run us down in seconds. We hurtled down the hallway.
Fire the first baby!
I cried. Brandon was correct that the title MOAB was misleading. The apparatus wasn't a bomb at all, but a device designed to launch bombs. Multiple types of bombs. It's the bomb's mother, I'd said. Get it? And we can name the bombs its babies. None of them had been impressed.
You need to stick to punching things and blowing them up,
Donut had said.
Leave the creative to me.
The device wasn't complicated, but it had to be precisely built, especially here with the bumpy hallways. It was little more than a curved, ski-jump-like ramp made from a pair of spare-part chopper wheel wells with a pair of half-pipe channels at the end to keep the baby steady, and tiny, shock-absorbing front wheelchair coasters for the very end of the ramp, keeping the end of the conduit inches from the ground. As a kid, I'd had something similar for my Matchbox cars. You dropped the cars into the top, and gravity took care of the rest. They'd plummet down the waterslide like ramp, gaining speed, hitting the ground at full throttle. If you built the ramp correctly, especially the part at the end, the cars would ease onto the flat surface, still accelerating by the time they were halfway across the room. It had taken us several hours to get this correct. We had very little space to test this in, but thanks to the know-how from Brandon and Chris, I was confident that the babies would work as intended. We knew this monster had at least two attacks, the claws and the reverse gravity spell. We also knew that the gravity spell had a somewhat limited range, so in order to get to our destination, we needed to keep the elemental far away long enough to get there.
Bombs away!
Donut cried. She pulled the wheeled, back-heavy bomb from her inventory. It fit perfectly into the grooves, and she gave it a nudge. It rocketed down the ramp, hit the ground with a bump, and continued straight. From our perspective, it zoomed away. It didn't rear up like I had feared.
Brandon, you beautiful son of a bitch!
I yelled as I watched the first bomb roll away over my shoulder. I'd wanted to put the weight in the front, but Brandon had insisted that was a mistake, that the bombs would flip. Instead, he'd drawn with his finger on the table, explaining how to weigh them down. He'd then gone off on some Isaac Newton math bullshit. He'd said the babies wouldn't go as far back as they would have if I'd been sitting still. He talked about some Mythbusters episode where they shot a soccer ball out of the back of a moving car, and the ball had dropped straight to the ground. I told him I didn't care as long as the bombs were far away from the chopper when they went off. After several frustrating failed attempts to automate the launching process, we'd come up with a solution. Once Donut was seated at the correct height, she could pull the babies out of her inventory, and they'd emerge right on the platform. Each bomb was the size of a snowboard, but it was shaped and weighted like a champion Pinewood Derby car. Wheels had suddenly become a precious commodity, but we had something almost as good. Free weights. A lot of free weights of different sizes. When tightened and greased properly, they became very effective wheels. This first baby, Baby Uno, was different than the others. It was heavier and bigger. It contained 3 boom jugs, a clay jug filled with nothing but goblin oil, and a small jar of gunpowder. The last of my hobgoblin pus sat in the middle of the bomb, and I held the magical trigger in my hand now, waiting for Donut's signal. We had 4 types of babies, Baby Uno, boom jar babies, shredder babies, and finally, oh shit babies. The oh shit babies consisted of 2 boom jars with a full-sized gunpowder satchel wrapped in dynamite. Those remained in my own inventory, too dangerous for Donut to touch. They were a last resort, and I prayed we wouldn't have to use them here. I watched the red dots stream down the hallway, approaching the corner. Far behind us, the heavy bomb coasted to a stop.
"Hang on!"
I cried, and I jammed on the detonator. There was a maddening 5-second delay. I turned my attention forward. Oh, fuck. We hit the first intersection, filled with the grub pupa, 12 of them.
What the hell, man?
I cried, dodging the giant mounds. I wasn't expecting them to be this damn big. Donut cried out as the trailer bumped ominously. Each mound was about the size of a human standing erect. Red and yellow lights flashed underneath the wet, pulsating sacks.
Drop the bola!
I yelled. We had 2 levers next to Donut's chair, the red one and the black one. We'd originally designed these as bomb launchers before we gave up, deciding to just use the more stable inventory system. But we'd still built 2 chambers on either side of the MOAB. Donut pulled the black lever, and the bottom of the chamber slid away. Imani's chain, with heavy weights at either end, dropped away, snaking through the chamber. The monster, hopefully, would get its legs tangled in the thin, unbreakable link. It probably would only impede it for a second or two, but every second counted. Behind us, the bomb detonated with a ripping, screaming roar. Dust cascaded off the ceiling. It had blown a 1/2 second too late, hitting the monster in the back. I didn't dare look behind me, but I could see on the map it had propelled the monster halfway down the hall, even closer to us. The red dot of the elemental rolled to a stop.
"Drop the boom babies!"
I cried. This next hall was filled with grubs, mostly level 3s, which I hadn't yet fought. These were larger, about twice as big as the regular grubs. They had long pointed tails that they whipped ineffectively up at us as we passed. The level 3s were too big to just run over with the chopper, and I had to dodge them.
"Cow-tailed brindle grub, level 3. The final form before they hit the pupa stage, the cow-tailed brindle grub is finally able to defend itself. Kind of like the way a toddler holding a plastic baseball bat is able to defend himself."
"The cars are going to hit the grubs!"
Donut cried.
"They're in the way!"
"Do it anyway!"
I yelled, increasing speed. Below me, the chopper became dangerously hot.
"Bombs away!"
Donut cried. I heard the distinctive clack of the bomb's wheels locking in place. The torch sizzled as Donut activated it, and it rolled away down the launcher ramp. Sure enough, the wheeled bomb hit a group of grubs and flipped, crashing and then detonating. A wave of heat washed over me, but I didn't take any damage. We were going fast enough. Barely. The entire hallway lit with blue flames.
"Yes!"
Donut cried.
"Burn, baby, burn!"
Further behind, the elemental resumed its pursuit. It stopped yet again a moment later. It had been ensnared by the chain. The monster roared in anger, shaking the very foundation of the world.
"Away!"
Donut called, dropping another boom baby. Then another. then a third. We continued to carpet bomb the hallway behind us. If the jugs didn't ignite on their own, Donut hit them with a low-powered magic missile once we were far away enough. She only had to do that a couple times. Most of the cars hit Grubbs and flipped.
Whoa!
Donut yelled. The whole back of the trailer flew up into the air, almost knocking me from my seat. But it crashed down a moment later. A just-launched Boom Baby flew into the ceiling and exploded. The elemental had cast its spell, but we'd been too far away. Behind us, the top of the chamber erupted in flames. My head and back burned, and I took a small amount of damage. Donut cried out in pain. She healed herself a moment later with her spell.
Hold on!
I cried. We were almost there, but I had a sharp left coming up. I could see this hallway was filled with more of the pupa.
Like we talked about! Drop a shredder, wait a second, then do another boom!
We screeched around the corner, the trailer skidding. I had to jerk around a set of pupa, rising like stalagmites. We'd only made a few of the gunpowder babies, but I'd made them for this part of the stretch. I had no idea if this would work, but I figured it couldn't hurt. Donut released the gunpowder and shrapnel-filled bomb. The shredders. For these, we used a long length of wick. I had to light wicks using a lighter, but thanks to Donut's quadruped status, the system allowed her to light them the same way she lit torches, with a mental click. She launched the massive shrapnel grenade. The long wick trailed sparks, like the tail of a rat. The baby crashed into one of the pupa mounds and fell on its side. A moment later, it blew, ripping the pupa to shreds. I hazarded a glance over my shoulder, just long enough to see several human-sized, hornet-like creatures vomit out of the sacks. The uncooked monsters hit the ground and started convulsing. I was hoping if I injured the chrysalis sacks, the monsters would come out, and the elemental would waste a valuable second or two ripping them to shreds. We filled the last stretch of hallway with moonshine and fire. The elemental seemed to be moving more cautiously, but it continued to follow. Ahead, the stairwell materialized. A warning appeared, blinking ominously just below the handlebars.
Goblin Copper Chomper. Boiler breach imminent.
God damn it, I growled.
I'd pushed it too hard. We had 15 seconds. I tried to remember which of the valves to turn to release the pressure.
I couldn't. Fuck it, I said, increasing the speed.
I thought we were going to the other safe room,
Donut cried.
We're not going down the stairs, are we?
We entered the large, round room. The stairwell loomed before us, a hole in the ground with a bright light shining directly up into the air. All around us, pupa pulsed, most of them ringing the walls. There were dozens of them now. All had timers over their heads, some of them only at a few hours. The actual stairs faced the wrong direction, but that was okay. There was no railing or barrier. This was nothing but a hole in the ground, as wide as one of the tunnels, just like it had been on the surface.
Oil slick, then jump!
Jump? Are you crazy?
God damn it, Donut, do it!
She pulled the red lever, and the bottom of the second chamber fell away. Champagne-colored oil sprayed onto the floor.
Jump!
I cried. Donut and I both leaped from the fast-moving vehicle. It continued its forward trajectory, spilling oil onto the rocky ground, plummeting into the deep stairway hole. The chopper disappeared from view. It crunched, followed by a relatively small explosion. Black smoke billowed into the air.
What did you do that for?
Donut yelled as we both scrambled to our feet.
Get your puddle jumper spell ready,
I said. I pointed behind us, at the far end of the distant hallway, the opposite direction we'd come. Mordecai's guild room was just around the corner from there.
Send us there! Cast it when I tell you!
Okay,
she said, her voice filled with uncertainty.
Don't forget, it's 10 seconds!
The elemental had, indeed, stopped to eviscerate the hornet creatures in the hall, giving me just enough time to think about how much of a crazy asshole I was.
The stairs are right there. We can just go down and be safe. If this doesn't work, you are dead.
I stood right at the edge of the hole.
Cast, now!
I cried. Why not? I thought, and I pulled one of the oh shit babies from my inventory and gently placed it down on the ground in front of us. It sat there like a giant skateboard. 2 boom jars, gunpowder, and a ring of dynamite. 9 seconds.
It's coming!
Donut screamed, her voice more terrified than I ever heard. She leaped to my shoulder. 8 seconds. In front of us, the Rage Elemental emerged from the billowing smoke of the hall. It was a beast from hell. Huge. Terrifying. A length of chain was still attached to its back leg. To my surprise, the monster's health was in the red. Barely in the red, but it had been more hurt than I expected. It saw us, and it paused. 5 seconds. It bellowed, long and hard. I looked up, for the first time, and I realized the ceiling of this chamber, like the burrow boss room on the floor above, was very, very high. If it cast reverse gravity now. 3 seconds. It charged. 2 seconds.
Stay with me,
I said. It passed the threshold of the room, and the moment its 6 legs hit the floor, it started to slide on the oil slick. It barely seemed to notice. It roared as it rocketed toward us, forward fingers ready to slash. I remembered what it did to Yolanda, unraveling her. We disappeared, reappearing about 500 feet away down the hall. A horrific, indignant shriek filled the dungeon, followed by the distinctive whoosh of a big-ass explosion. I hit the ground and covered Donut, but it was okay. The bomb was deep in the hole when it went off, and we were far away. A moment passed. I watched the mini-map, looking for signs that the monster had survived. The dot was gone. Absolute silence followed. My stomach heaved, an after-effect of the sudden teleportation. Relief washed over me. I sat down right there on the floor. My heart, which had been oddly calm throughout, was now a jackhammer. My arms felt numb, tingling with the overdose of adrenaline. My entire body trembled. A moment later, Donut cried out in outrage.
We didn't get any experience! Carl, you broke the game!
We didn't get any experience because we're not the ones who killed it.
What?
Donut said.
I don't understand.
I remembered what Rory, the goblin Shamanka, had told us. It had only been a few days ago, but it felt like a lifetime.
If we climb down the stairs, we die. You get halfway down and your body just dissolves. I've seen it myself.
Mordecai had said something similar once, too. Mobs who dared to attempt to descend didn't teleport away. They died. We'd tricked the monster into the hole. Once it was in there, the dungeon followed its own rules, and it dissolved the elemental. Unfortunately, the system didn't look too kindly on what we'd done. We hadn't been awarded experience for the kill. I'd received a couple achievements, but not many. But that was okay. We were still alive. I took in the mass of red grub dots and X's littering the map. I felt as if I'd been awake for 2 days straight. I groaned, pulling myself to my feet. We still had a lot of work to do. Carl. Brandon. Get your people to the stairs. Do it now. The way is safe, but it won't be for long. Chapter 41. Time to level collapse. 4 days, 6 hours. Views, 1.4 trillion. Followers, 352.2 billion. Favorites, 21.4 billion. I still had plenty of moonshine left, and Donut and I spent the hour torching all the pupa in the large room. I looked up at the map. There was no way we could get to them all. We were going to have to hightail it out of here. With the unfortunate destruction of the chopper, our travel options were now limited. I had enough crap in my massive inventory to probably build another one, but I didn't know what I was doing with the boiler part of the mechanism. Hopefully we could find another set of goblins to help us. Or, better yet, find something more reliable. About 40 minutes after we killed the elemental, the tattered remains of Meadowlark entered the chamber. Brandon, Chris, and Imani had built a second, less elegant transportation system. There were 36 residents left, and they were piled into 3 separate shopping cart-like contraptions, built with chopper wheels and hunks of wood. Chris and Imani pushed the 2 larger people buckets, as Brandon called them. This time, Both of them strained with the effort. Brandon, whose strength was nowhere near the others, also awkwardly pushed a group of six people into the room.
"We didn't need your directions,"
Brandon said.
"There's a long trail of scorched hallway that leads directly to this hole."
He paused.
"There are a lot of those chrysalis things out there. You sure you don't want to just come with us?"
"I'm sure," I said. I looked into the smoking hole. "Do me a favor, though, and pick up anything you find down there. There probably isn't much left." He nodded. I reached out to shake his hand, and he pulled me into a hug.
"You two take care of yourselves, okay?"
I grinned. "You do the same." I said my goodbyes to Chris and Imani. I found Donut on the lap of Mrs. McGibbons, purring away.
"Barry?"
she asked as I walked up.
"Barry, where are we?"
"We're in the dungeon, Mrs. McGibbons. It's me, Carl. You're going down to the next floor." She looked at me, her eyes registering confusion. Once again, I felt a wave of doubt wash over me. Was this the right thing? What else could we do?
"The dungeon? Like a sex thing?"
"I don't know if I'm ever going to see you again," I said, kneeling down. She sat in the people bucket, looking about, eyes wide. I wanted to say goodbye. She reached up and touched my cheek. At that moment, she looked every day of her 99 years. Her hands were worryingly cold.
"We should have had children, Barry. I wish I hadn't talked you into working so hard."
I grasped her hand. "It's okay. It's going to be okay." I remembered my mom saying the same thing to me the day she had left. It had been a lie then, and it was a lie now.
"I think I've had too much to drink. Or I'm having another one of those acid flashbacks. This cat keeps talking to me."
I smiled. "Goodbye, Mrs. McGibbons." Imani was the last to go down the ramp. It had gone quickly. She waved, unsmiling, at us. I waved back, and we turned away.
"Do you think we'll ever see them again?"
Donut asked. "I don't know," I said. We angled toward the quadrant with the kobolds, killing all the grubs and burning all the pupa we passed. Earlier, I had noted a safe room deep in the kobold quadrant, along the backside of the area. We would grind our way toward it and try to get a nap before we had to do this next interview. Hopefully, the hornet monsters, when they hatched, would remain in their area.
Kobold Rider, Level 5. Here's an interesting fact. The DNA of a kobold and the DNA of a chihuahua are almost identical. That should tell you almost everything you need to know about these yappy little assholes. Small, angry, think they are bigger than they really are. There is nothing more terrifying than a pack of these little bastards charging at you across the battlefield. At least in their own minds. But don't underestimate them either. They are fearless, they are intelligent, and they bite first, ask questions later. Their mounts, the danger dingoes, should probably worry you.
The last time I'd played Dungeons and Dragons had been aboard the USCGC Stratton. I remembered kobolds as little lizard-like monsters. In the game I'd played, the Dungeon Master had them as minions of a small dragon. Here, they were different. They, indeed, looked like goddamned armored chihuahuas. They were about the same size as the barking little dogs, but they stood upright and wore chainmail armor that seemed to be made out of beer can tabs. Each wore tiny metal caps with a spike on them. Most of them were armed with long, angry-looking spears with feathers hanging off of the end. They wielded them like lances.
"Dogs riding dogs,"
Donut spat as the pair of danger dingo riding kobolds charged at us.
"I've had nightmares like this."
She hissed and fired a pair of magic missiles, hitting the mounts. The level 5 dingoes stumbled, rolling forward. I formed a fist as the two kobold riders went flying. The first one crunched onto the ground, breaking his neck. The second bounced up, yapping, teeth frothing. It charged at me. I punched it, and it splattered against the wall. The things were more solid than they looked. I fell back as one of the dingoes lunged at me. This one had a septic debuff blinking over its head. This monster's snarl and bark was deeper, more terrifying than that of its rider. Their white face paint made them appear even more frightening. Donut leaped onto the back of the dingo, ripping with her rear claws as she hopped high into the air and fired a third magic missile at the still-recovering second mount, killing it. The dingo on top of me shuddered, then fell over, dead. Stinking blood and gore washed over me as I pushed it off. Donut landed deftly next to me and started licking her paw.
"Ugh, that was pretty slick," I said, brushing myself off. My entire front was soaked in gore. "You're getting a lot better at that."
"I think I have a bonus to damage against canine creatures. That reminds me, I saw something weird earlier, and I forgot to tell you about it. It was a new tab that said racial benefits, but it was only there for a second. It blinked and disappeared."
"Huh. That is weird," I said. Instinctively, I pulled up my own menu, and I didn't have anything like that. The safe room was just around the corner. After we obliterated the kobold and dingo corpses, we headed toward it. This was another one of the non-manned rooms. The room appeared to have once been some sort of industrial kitchen, but with all the appliances removed except a large walk-in freezer that still was in working order. We inspected the giant refrigerator, but it was empty. A stainless steel counter stood underneath the set of screens, and on the counter was a plain metallic toaster surrounded by a pile of crumbs. It didn't seem to be plugged into anything, but I couldn't lift it up either. Up on the screen it read, "Free mana toast, one per crawler." I pressed down the little handle, and a moment later it popped up. A burned triangle of toast jumped out, landing on the counter. I picked it up and smelled it. I examined its properties.
"Mana toast! This is toast! It refills your mana! That's it! Nothing more! Fuck you!"
"Well, that was unnecessary," I muttered. I gave my piece to Donut, who tucked them both away into her inventory. The room also contained a drinking fountain, a couple chairs and cots, and a set of bathrooms. As had become our custom, we checked both of the bathrooms out. They were empty, but someone had clearly been here before us. The toilet paper had all been taken, and the shampoo dispenser in the woman's shower had been emptied. The floor was wet, like someone had recently taken a shower. "Mukta, admin. Crawlers Carl and Princess Donut, you are to be transported to your interview in 10 minutes. Prepare yourselves."
"Mukta?"
Donut.
"Who are you? Where is Zev?"
"Mukta, admin. Your outreach associate has been put in a timeout. She will return to you tomorrow. I am her substitute until then." I glanced up at the clock. We had 8 hours until the next episode. That wasn't right. "Carl, we weren't supposed to go for another couple hours." "Mukta, admin. Administrator Zev had you scheduled on a program called Dungeon Crawl Tactics. I have overridden her decision and picked a better program for you. This one is paying a higher fee. Do not worry, it is similar to the other one. It is still roundtable style. Close enough, at least. They still offer gifts to the participants." "Carl, we were promised the right to refuse interviews. I don't want to go on this one." "Mukta, admin. You seem to be under the impression that you have a say in this, crawler." Donut.
"What did Zev do? Why is she in a timeout?"
The message clicked away, and the chat disappeared from our log. There was no way to respond or initiate a new message.
"Carl, I'm not ready."
A brush appeared in front of her.
"Brush me, quick."
The front of my jacket was still covered in dingo gore. I moved to the bathroom to clean myself off the best I could.
"I'll get to you in a minute."
"I don't like this," I said a few minutes later, as I brushed a knot out of Donut's fur. This was my first time doing this since we'd come to the dungeon. I had a quick memory of B teaching me how to properly brush the cat. The first time I'd ever done it, Donut had yowled and tried to disembowel me. B and I had fallen over ourselves laughing at the indignant look on the cat's face. It had taken months before she'd sit still and let me do it. We only had a couple minutes, and I spent it looking at the handful of achievements I'd received from our Rage Elemental Gambit. Donut actually had several more than I did, all of them bomb-themed ones I'd already received. She didn't waste time opening the associated boxes just yet, instead opting to use her precious few minutes cleaning herself. Most of my own bomb-themed skills moved up to level 9. I now had a handful of mechanic and construction-themed skills as well. I received 2 achievements of note.
New achievement! Grease Monkey! Don't get ahead of yourself, Dale. You built and deployed a wheeled device. When the primitive humans in Mesopotamia made the first wheel, they probably thought they were hot shit, too. It still took them another 5,000 years after that to invent the toilet. Reward? You've received a silver mechanics box. New achievement! You call that a trap? A mob has been injured because of something you purposely left lying around the dungeon. From scattered Legos to spiked pits to buckets of flesh-devouring Skinner ants to dimensional rifts that instantly boil all the blood in one's body, the art of trap-making has a celebrated and storied history in the annals of Dungeon Crawler World. So if you're going to do it, you better do it right. Whatever it was that gave you this achievement, it was probably something stupid. This will help you make the next trap more exciting. Remember, if you don't make it titillating, we will. Reward? You've received a gold sapper's box.
I was a bit confused about what, specifically, gave me the trap achievement. I knew Donut had received this one, too. I guessed it was from either dropping the chain or the oil slick. Probably not the bombs, which were placed in another category. The mechanics box gave me a tool called a Gorgon Marital Aid. It was shaped like a spatula. What the hell is this? I muttered, pulling up its properties.
Gorgon Marital Aid. A favorite amongst intergalactic porn stars, this is a hardening and dehardening tool. May only be used at a workbench. Assists in fusing joints or creating varying degrees of plasticity in otherwise rigid materials without affecting material strength.
That seemed like a pretty useful tool. I put it in my inventory next to my Guinator 3000. The sapper's box contained 2 items. A sapper's table that practically knocked me over when it appeared. It was a table just like my engineering and alchemy table. The description noted that explosive items or traps created at the table didn't lose stability or couldn't be prematurely set off. The second item in the box was a trap-building item. There were 10 of them, and each one was nothing more than a tiny black box the size of a dime with a long length of wire attached.
Proximity trigger! Trigger warning, traumatizing content. Using a sapper's table, the highly valuable proximity trigger may be attached to any non-static trap. Allows for the establishment of activation conditions, including countdowns, mob-type triggers, etc.
Sure enough, the moment I put the item in my inventory, it placed itself near the top of the list in terms of value. Right behind that ridiculous fireball or custard lottery ticket. And I now had 10 of them. After all of that, my level was still stuck at 11. It was near the edge of 12, but it had barely budged since the fight with Krakaren. Plan was, for now, to kill off the kobolds and then move out of the area. I was hoping to be at least level 13 by the time we hit the stairs. Mukta, admin. Transferring now. Before I even had the chance to finish my thought, we disappeared and reappeared. Donut, who had been sitting on a chair, reappeared 2 feet in the air. She yowled in surprise and fell. Her metallic crupper clinked onto the boat's deck. The ground roiled. As always, my HUD snapped off. We were on another boat, one much smaller than the last one. There were no windows and no doors. There were no features at all other than a pair of chairs that sat cramped together at one end of the room. The place was about the size of a large walk-in closet. I could reach up and touch the ceiling, which seemed to be made of plastic. The room smelled of salt water and was about 20 degrees cooler than the dungeon. A floating frisbee thing descended from the low ceiling. The jet-black metallic disc hummed. A single blue light flashed on the edge. It spoke in a soothing, female, robotic voice.
My name is Mex55. You are in a rental trailer owned and operated by Senegal Production Systems Unlimited. This trailer is used by multiple tunnel productions related to the crawl. For this session, use of these facilities has been leased by the program Death Watch Extreme Dungeon Mayhem. Sit in the provided chairs and keep your limbs to your side while the table generates. The hollow will commence in 60 seconds.
No green room?
Donut said, looking around, outraged.
No snacks?
Please sit down.
Max 55 repeated.
What's the host's name?
Donut asked.
The Maestro,
Max 55 said. Her previously emotionless voice hinted an air of distaste. Death Watch Extreme Dungeon Mayhem, I muttered, moving to the chair. The moment we sat, Donut's seat raised up. A table formed out of the wall, grinding in place in front of us. It was only about 2 feet wide. That's the stupidest name I've ever heard.
Yeah. Wait until you see the show,
Max 55 said, before rising up into the ceiling. Chapter 42.
I'm going to vomit,
Donut said, as the floor heaved.
I'm going to puke on television, Carl.
You'll get used to it. I think when the hollow starts, it stabilizes. Just breathe.
I don't like puking. I don't want to puke.
Really? I seem to recall you had a thing for vomiting on my pillow.
That was different. I did that on purpose.
I knew it. I fucking knew it. Donut made a gagging noise.
Yeah. The last place didn't bounce around this much.
The seas were calmer, and it was a bigger boat. Breathe. The dark, heaving room flickered, and the lights turned on, revealing an audience. They had no reaction to our sudden appearance, and I suspected we weren't yet visible to them. The sensation of movement was suddenly much more muted. It was still there, but the hollow had some sort of compensation effect. I looked about the suddenly bigger room. A table floated before us, much larger than the actual table in the trailer. This table curved, shaped like a smile. We sat in the second and third seat. To our left was a larger, more ornate chair. It was made of a dark wood with what appeared to be red velvet cushions. The armrests were made of pig skulls. Four more plain, empty chairs appeared to our right, curving along the table. I looked over my shoulder, and the backdrop was an elephant-like monster with three spike-covered trunks. The animation swung its head back and forth in a